If you deal with back pain, you know it can make you feel miserable. The idea of invasive treatments can be scary, but did you know that there are actually many alternatives for treating back pain? Let's talk about it with Dr. Jason Smith, a physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist at Atlantic Medical Group. This is Building Healthier Communities, the podcast from Atlantic Medical Group. I'm Prakash Chandran. So Dr. Smith, can you tell us a little bit about the most common causes of back pain?
The most common causes of back pain is just your everyday sprain and strain. They don't have to necessarily be caused by any one instance in particular. Some people get them getting out of bed and taking a shower, doing yard work. The second most common cause, I would say, is just natural degeneration, which occurs over time. Primarily due to age, but of course, there's other risk factors as well.
When these things come about, and as I get older, I'm starting to experience more and more back pain, I just go back to what my dad told me, which is like rub some Bengay or some Tiger Balm on it, and it'll heal itself eventually. So maybe talk to us a little bit about the treatments that are available and some of the advancements that have been made.
I mean, that's still done by a lot of patients. I myself use topical analgesics from time to time as well. But sometimes that doesn't work. You know, sometimes you need something a little bit more. Typically, you know, I usually tell my patients, you know, at least for the first 72 hours, you want to give it a rest, use some ice, try not to do anything too strenuous. Usually over-the-counter anti-inflammatory, such as ibuprofen or naproxen, which is a leave, can be used to help with that. Typically, you take it at a higher dose throughout the day, three times a day. Of course, taking it with food so that you don't irritate your stomach, as long as you can take it and don't have any allergies. But then, you know, if that pain doesn't get any better with just a simple kind of at-home remedies, you know, ice included, no heat. And I tell patients no heat initially, ice. That's when usually patients tend to come to see me and we talk about other options to help treat their pain.
I just want to dig into that a little bit more. You said no heat first, ice. Is that to just keep the swelling down?
That is exactly what that's for. So ice is a very good anti-inflammatory. Heat, while it feels very good, it is a pro-inflammatory. And so especially during the acute phases of any type of pain, you want to keep that inflammation down as low as possible. So I usually tell patients avoid heat. I mean, obviously you can take a hot shower, you know, a hot bath. But as far as placing localized heat on the place of your hurt, you want to try and avoid that.
It's good to hear you say that, because when my dad has back pain, the first thing that he does is he grabs the heating pad and he puts it on his back, and it feels like the pain persists for a while. And that's probably why he should be icing it. I'm curious as to when they've tried everything, over-the-counter medicine, topical treatments, that still doesn't seem to be working, and they come to see you. Tell us a little bit about the treatments that you give your patients, especially the latest non-invasive ones that are available to them.
So, I mean, there's several options that could be presented. Obviously, the most conservative of all of those methods is prescribing physical therapy for the patient. Now, while I'm a very big believer in physical therapy, I'm also a big believer in knowing when to start it. So obviously, if I have a patient that comes in to see me and they're in a significant amount of pain, we're really not going to look to try and start physical therapy at that point in time. Another option that can be used in certain instances, particularly for patients who are having primarily joint pain in their lower back, is getting them in contact with a good chiropractor. From a medication standpoint, there are a variety of medications that can be used in the acute as well as the long-term phase of trying to treat this. Our goal is always to try to keep patients on as little medication as possible for as short a time as possible, but we use what we need to make sure we get them back to a significantly beneficial quality of life. So some of the medications that we use are extra strength anti-inflammatories, such as ibuprofen 800, naproxen 500 milligrams. Sometimes we'll place patients on a prednisone taper. Prednisone is the strongest anti-inflammatory that we have in medicine. You know, works really well for patients. We do tell patients if they have diabetes or any type of allergy to prednisone, you know, obviously we tend to try to stay away from that. Coming off of medications, well, actually, let me just kind of back up. There are other medications such as Neurontin, Lyrica, which could be used. They're primarily used in other patients as anticonvulsants, but they've also been shown to help with pain. But then you can even use certain and I put this in quotes, antidepressant medications such as Cymbalta or Savella to help relieve pain in patients on either an acute or a long-term basis. Moving on from medications, typically the next step particularly depending on the patient's symptoms. If somebody's having, say, sciatic pain, that's when we can talk about things such as epidural steroid injections, which is looking to do an injection into ultrasound or x-ray guidance, primarily x-ray guidance, and putting medication back in the area of the inflamed nerve to diminish their symptoms that way.
What about the other modalities like acupuncture or massage? I know you mentioned chiropractors. You know, I've heard about that and even this thing called spinal cord stimulation. Can you talk a little bit about these treatments?
I am a big believer in holistic modalities as well. I tell my patients that it's good to use traditional Western medicine in combination with holistic modalities such as acupuncture, aquatherapy. So those are things that for the appropriate patient can be recommended. I tell patients that modalities such as acupuncture will not help the acute pain, but for that chronic kind of low-level nagging sensation is definitely something that can be utilized. I'm also big on spinal traction, so I usually, for the right patient, recommend looking into an inversion table. You can get a good inversion table for just $100, brand new, even cheaper if you buy it off somebody else, and that really gives patients, you know, the opportunity to kind of just get their back stretched, and they could do it at home, and it's something that's doesn't take up a lot of space, and you can keep it in your closet when you don't need it. And then moving on to what you brought up as far as spinal cord stimulation, that is something that has really kind of revolutionized non-surgical back pain. Usually, it's a tertiary modality, meaning that it is recommended primarily for patients who, when it comes to the spine, patients who have may have failed surgery or have not been necessarily cleared to have surgery. And so what that's doing is basically, in essence, trying to utilize a different pathway by stimulating the dorsal posterior aspect of the spinal column to block pain signals to the brain. And that's come such a long way over the past 10, 15 years. It's something that's now MRI compatible. So, you know, patients, if they need MRIs in the future, it's no longer going to hinder that. And it's really freed up patients from having to take medications and giving them back a quality of life that they thought they weren't able to have prior to that.
Yeah, it really does sound like in today's world, there's so many treatments and modalities to help us feel better when we're experiencing back pain. But I always like to talk about prevention. So maybe you can give us some tips around the best ways that we can prevent the onset of back pain or just minimize how painful it is.
The best way to try and prevent back pain is to keep a strong core and good posture. I would probably say the third thing, and that would be proper sleeping posture, where I tell patients the type of mattress you lay on really doesn't matter. It's really how you sleep. So if you're somebody who likes to sleep on their back, you know, you really want to try and see if you can keep a pillow underneath your knees, underneath your calf section. Sleep on the side, you want to try to keep a pillow in between your legs. That type of posture keeps your spine in alignment, so it prevents any type of sagging, which can start to cause some breakdown there. Other things are, you know, stay active, but not too active as far as overdoing it. Be careful as far as the type of profession you may have. Certain professions are more at risk for this. I see people who are in very physical professions tend to wear down their backs a whole lot quicker than those who are not. And try and keep a healthy weight. You know, keep walking around with excess weight. That's just excess pressure on your back. So if you can keep that within a moderate amount, then that's something that helps you as well.
Out of curiosity, when you say keeping your core strong, is that like just doing crunches? Like, what do you mean by that?
Crunches are something that you can do. I like to tell patients do planks if you can do planks. Sit-ups are good as well, leg lifts. Side planks are very good, and even just doing regular at home exercises with exercise bands can really help with that. But that's just something that I feel like a lot of patients just don't necessarily think about. So that's your number one protection for your back, period, for whether you're going for a run, whether you're unfortunately in like an accident or have a slip and fall, that helps keep things in place during those times of trauma.
All right, Dr. Smith, really fantastic advice. That's Dr. Jason Smith, a physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist at Atlantic Medical Group. Thanks for checking out this episode of Building Healthier Communities. For more information on this topic and to access the resources mentioned, call 973-971-6305 or go to findadoctor.atlantichealth.org. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and be sure to check out the entire podcast library for topics of interest to you. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.